pretty much any time a new rifle cartridge comes out, shooters like to look at its ballistics and compare it to a similar cartridge that already exists. I get this tendency, but it's a pretty shallow way to look at cartridge advancement overall. But before we go any further, I should give a quick disclaimer. If you love that old 30-06 your grandpa gave you, we are in no way saying that you should trade it in. There is no new cartridge invention that detracts from the performance of an older cartridge. And yes, those old school rifles work just as good as they always have. However, there's some new stuff out there, and when you dig into it, you'll find that it's pretty damn cool. I'm Editor-in-Chief Alex Robinson, and in this episode of the podcast, I'm talking to our shooting editor, John Snow. He just finished reviewing the hot new 22 ARC from Hornady. This cartridge serves as a good example of where things are going and why you, yes, even you 30-06 shooters, should pay attention. Okay, John, you just got done shooting and reviewing the 22 ARC. Just to get us started, could you tell us about what that cartridge is and what's cool about it?
Well, those are two kind of different questions. The first one's really easy. The headline is it's a high performance 22 centerfire cartridge that basically kind of the main selling point is that it duplicates the 22-250, the classic varmint cartridge, but is able to run out of a AR-15 sized platform. So AR-15 magazines and AR-15 sized rifles. So that's the basic idea of it. And that sort of sounds interesting itself, but like what's cool about it is when you look kind of under the hood at how the cartridge is designed and just some of the subtle differences and features, including developing a whole new line of bullets, it becomes a much more kind of compelling and, for a gun nerd like me, interesting story.
Yeah. Okay. So I shouldn't be like, they're just putting a spin on the 22-250.
Yeah, exactly. You know, because, and here's the thing I think is going to be a challenge for the cartridge is, you know, everybody gets a little inundated by cartridge introductions. Like really, like what's the point? And, yeah, you know, people are going to be like out there, well, this doesn't do anything and we can rattle off the list. My 223 doesn't do, my 22 Nosler doesn't do, my 224 Valkyrie doesn't do. You know, how is this not just muddying the waters? And honestly, that was a little bit of my initial thought on it too. When I first heard about it, you know, I'm like, oh my God, they just, you know, they had the 6 ARC and they've got this platform, and now they're just sort of extending their tendrils out for world dominance. But why do we have to participate in that? But it turns out that perspective really isn't correct. And when you get into the weeds of what the cartridge does, it actually, you know, after spending all the time I spent with it, I'm like, I get it. That was kind of my takeaway. And I think it has a very legitimate sort of niche that it's filling in a really cool way. But I think the challenge for Hornady is going to be, and everybody else, is to communicate what exactly that advantage is.
Okay, well, let's get into the weeds. Like, what does it do that my 243 doesn't?
Well, so we'll go back to the size. The 243, obviously kind of a standard short action sized 308 based round in 6mm. Great cartridge, but it's longer. It has more recoil. And so what the 22 ARC does is, you know, it's got this kind of minimal recoil. It's got a really flat shooting characteristic to it. And in a sense, we got to go back to the origin story.
Let's do it. The 22 ARC is a superhero, and we need to know its origin story.
Its origin story started at the end of World War II and the defeat of the Nazis, like every good superhero. And the thing is, I'm not kidding.
That's right. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So
tell me more.
So the parent case, so when we look at the parentage of the case, obviously Hornady had the 6 ARC, and now they necked it down to 22. And so you'd think that the 22 ARC came from the 6 ARC. Wrong. Actually, the 22 arc predates the 6 arc. Both of them, both arcs, the 6 arc and the 22 arc, are based on the 6.5 Grendel. You've heard of the Grendel. It was sort of the hotness. It was introduced back in 2003 as sort of a 6.5 millimeter cartridge out of a AR-sized platform, and a lot of people adopted it and really enjoyed it. Well, all right, well, where did the 6.5 Grendel come from? You know, because it's got its own case size. It's not a 223 case head on it. It's not a 308 case head, the ones that people are most familiar with. What it actually goes back to is a 7.62 by 39 classic Soviet AK-47 round. Now, the thing that's weird about that is that, you know, that AK-47 round, nobody thinks much about that in terms of accuracy. But there was a spinoff of that round that became known as the 220 Russian. And the 220 Russian's been around for decades and is probably, arguably, not even probably, it's the most accurate cartridge in history.
Hmm.
Yeah. So when you look at bench rest shooting and the famous bench rest cartridges, the 6 millimeter PPC, the 22 PPC and that whole family of stuff, they're all based off the 220 Russian. And so the guy who developed the Grendel, his last name was Alexander, he based the Grendel off the 220 Russian. And in turn, now the 22 arc and the 6 arc are based off the 220 Russian as well. So that's kind of the generational breakdown of the cartridge and really the transition of the 7.62-39 Soviet round to the super accurate 220 Russian is what sort of enabled this this evolution. Okay, so we have that established. The Grendel was established in the early 2000s. Wildcatters were playing around with that almost from the get-go, you know, necking it up, necking it down. And so there was a version of that called the 22 Grendel. And and really the 22 arc is probably most closely related in sort of the little evolutionary tree to the 22 Grendel. Now, what changed with the 22 Grendel was that in, I think it was around 2017, Hornaday came out with their ELDM line of bullets, ELD for extreme load drag and then match. And so this was a line of bullets that a lot of competitive shooters, myself included, have just adopted very, very quickly, you know, because they have, you know, these sleek profiles, really high BC. They shoot flat. They resist the wind, you know. And so, you know, we've seen them loaded in factory ammo. So these ELDMs in factory ammo. So like the 147 ELDM and a 6.5 Creedmoor and a 6.5 PRC that people are probably familiar with, or the 140 ELDM and a 6.5 Creedmoor. You know, great, great cartridge, great bullet. They also developed a 75 grain ELDM in a 224 caliber, you know, and 224 is what these all take in terms of bullet diameter. So as soon as that 75 grainer became available, a buddy of mine, Greg Hamilton, who is the sort of research director up at Proof Research and a really successful, well-known competitive shooter, you know, he shoots with Outdoor Life's test team member, Sean Murphy. I've written about those two. They're the most successful sniper competition duo in history.
Yeah, you called them the Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen of the sniper competition, except they're both Michael Jordan.
Exactly. I mean, they're just great. And so anyway, they do a lot of like run and gun type, high intensity endurance team sniper matches. So you can imagine being on a stage out there where you have to run, literally run, you know, for maybe half an hour, 45 minutes through terrain, engaging every target along the way. And you're under a time pressure. And so you don't have time to range every piece of steel out there and get a neat little firing solution. Like you've got to play that game. So you're going to have to run and gun. So you can see now where you want a round that's going to shoot super flat and have no wind deflection, where you can just take a guesstimate on the range and either hold high on the target or just above and just dink, drop that round right in there. That's what Greg Hamilton wanted. And when he saw that 75 ELDM and that 22 Grendel and he mushed them together and, you know, he put the first rounds of those downrange, I think in November of 2018 is if I remember from the story correctly, you know, was the first group that he printed. And that was really the birth of the 22 arc. He didn't know it at the time. But he started to work with Hornaday from that get-go to like kind of push them for this cartridge. And Hornaday was a little bit like, I don't know. I mean, run and gun sniper match, high performance 22 rounds sounds a little niche, Greg. Right. As cool as that might be,
cool, we'll make them for you and your buddies.
Exactly. Like, but in fairness, Hornaday looked at it and actually said, you know what? There's actually potential for this as a hunting round, particularly if we bring this new bullet we're thinking about bringing to market. And the niche that it really slots into is hunting with thermals at night for coyotes.
Yeah.
So as we know, this night vision stuff has exploded. It's a big, right? I mean, talk a little bit about what that's done for outdoor life.
Yeah. This is perfect content for outdoor life because it is advanced technology that is actually really applicable to our core audience. Like thermals, even just a few years ago, you know, thermal scopes and thermal optics felt out of reach for the everyday hunter. Now you're seeing more and more people using them, not like professionals or anything, just guys who are really into this, coyote hunters who are really into their gear. They're all running thermals. And this is like the fastest growing gear category that we're covering right now. So yeah, I would say Hornady's onto something, you know, with a cartridge that appeals to this crowd.
Yeah. And so what they did is that this year they've just launched this new VT line of bullets. So they have their three flavors of the ELDMs, the extreme low drag. There's the ELDM, the match bullets. Then there's the ELDXs, which I think all of us have hunted with. That's their expanding hunting bullet. And, you know, I've used that bullet probably on more game in the last handful of years than any other bullet. And now this new VT, which stands for varmint target. In the construction of this VT line, they did something kind of really neat. Basically, what they did is they took the 75 grain, in the case of the 224 sized bullet, they took their 75 grain and just removed a fair chunk of lead from the tip of the bullet. So now there's a hollow space there. Okay. And this sounds basic, but it accomplishes a bunch of kind of interesting things. The most obvious of which is that it drops the bullet weight. So it goes from a 75 grain now to a 62. And at a 62 grain, because of the way interior ballistics looks, we can push that bullet faster, right? You know, lighter bullets, you know, everything else being equal, we're going to be able to push them faster and not have too much pressure generated by the round. So we can drive that bullet faster. Now, the thing that's kind of cool is because it retains that shape of the 75 grain, or it's got that really nice high BC, not going to be quite as high as the 75 grain, or that weight does matter, but it's not like a typical 60 grain. Yeah. It's not like a classic old school 60 grain 224 caliber bullet. You know, it's still in this extremely low drag category. So it retains really nice BC and flight characteristics. Now, also because it has that hollow space behind it, it's gonna fragment like crazy, like the way you want a varmint bullet to do, right?
Yeah.
So from a terminal perspective, it just makes it an explosive round. Whereas a match bullet, you can certainly hunt and kill things with match bullets, and people do, but you know, you do run the risk of sort of uncertain fragmentation or whatever. You know, so this answers that. But now here's where the nerd fest gets deep. So by removing the weight from up front, they moved the center of gravity of the bullet rearward a bit. Like, that makes sense. Why do we care about that? Well, when a bullet flies through the air, there's something called the center of pressure on a bullet, which is basically a force of instability that pushes on the ogive of the bullet. Now, the ogive is the curved portion of the bullet between the tip of the bullet and the shank. So, you know, that curved portion is the ogive. So every bullet that is flying downrange has a force of instability called the center of pressure pushing on the nose of the bullet. Now, if a bullet is being spun faster, like with a faster twist rate, that has more gyroscopic stability. So that helps resist that center of pressure instability. But another thing that allows you to resist that center of pressure instability is the position of the center of gravity of the bullet. Mm. Basically, the distance between the center of pressure and the center of gravity is like a little lever. And it's a lever, like the longer the lever, the more resistance to instability you have. So by moving the center of gravity rearward, they actually improved the stability of the bullet as well. Mm. You know, and so from a just a ballistic standpoint, it's another benefit. So really in the design of this bullet, they're able to drive it faster, still have a high BC, have really great terminal performance, and it took an already ballistically impressive bullet and just, you know, upped its stability in these areas. So it was just kind of a multi-part win for this. And so what we've got now is, you know, this thing coming to fruition, particularly in the 22 arc, in a way that is just like, oh wow. All right, so now when I look at this compared to other rounds out there, like you really start to see, you know, the benefit of it. I mean, just as a for instance, you know, in terms of wind deflection or how the 22 arc compares to the 22-250.
Yeah, that's probably its like closest competitor still, right?
Yeah, well, it's a good point of reference because I think most people out there who are varmint hunters anyway, are familiar with the 22-250. And, you know, if you shot them, you know that bullets between like 40 grains and 60 grains are sort of a sweet spot for the round. You know, and if you compare like the drop of the bullets, so like I have a really neat old Savage single shot heavy barrel model 12 that's like been one of my go-to prairie dog guns for 20 years. You know, I shoot Winchester 55 grain ballistic silver tips out there at almost 3,600 feet per second. I mean, it's just a smoking round, and that's out of a 26 inch barrel. You know, at 600 yards, that bullet drops 63.5 inches. Well, the 22 arc, and remember, this is out of a 20 inch barrel, a more compact package, an AR package. That 22 arc has dropped 64.7 inches. So 1.2 inches more of drop. That's it. So it's shooting neck and neck. Okay. So that's where you see the equivalence between the two. Now look at the wind drift at 600 yards, a 10 mile an hour wind is going to blow that 22-250 41 inches. You know, that's a big chunk.
That's yeah.
Yeah. The 22 arc, less than 27 inches of wind drift.
Wow. And for folks who have shot at these distances, they know just how critical, like we can all use our rangefinder, right? But the hard part is judging wind.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's, you know, for anybody who's a long range shooter, yes, the calculating the drop is not the hard part, you know, right. It's the wind resistance. So now when you see, you know, that in a chart, you're like, okay, I get it. Smaller rifle, minimal recoil, shoots flat, easy to carry, less wind, you know, much more wind forgiveness. Like it's pretty cool. So that sort of tells the story there. And then people are getting, I didn't go into this in the article much, but like, so how does it compare to say the other sort of souped up 22s out there, the 22 Nosler and the 224 Valkyrie? Well, the 22 Nosler also, you know, it's a fat little case that runs through an AR-15 and it does what it's supposed to do very well, which it drives light bullets very fast. So it's kind of like an old school cartridge design mentality. Let's shoot a light bullet as fast as possible. So, you know, if you know, you want to just use old school varmint bullets, you know, that 22 Nosler is not a bad choice. It does that very well, but the 22 Nosler cannot handle the heavier bullets, the 62 grain ELDVT, things like the 75 grain ELDM or the 88 grain ELDM, like the 22 Noslers can't do that. And then the 224 Valkyrie, I always feel bad for this round because it had such promise coming out. It sort of falls into an awkward, like no man's land in between the two. When you try to run some of these bigger bullets, you know, the 75 grainer, let's just focus on that, through a Valkyrie, what happens is because the powder chamber is so much bigger than the 22 arc, that bullet ends up getting seated back into the case.
Yeah.
And that does several things, none of them good. One is that that's not how, for accuracy, you want a cartridge to support a bullet. You don't want, you know, because with that bullet sticking down into the chamber, as the propellant ignites, it can actually push on the rear of that bullet like sideways, you know, and any sideways force, obviously not bueno for accuracy. And the other thing is that it also takes away powder capacity, right? So you can't drive them as fast, even though it looks like it has more powder capacity just visually. You're taking away that powder capacity. And that also, because of the way the internal ballistics works, it drives up pressure as well. And so when you start to bump into pressure issues, you know, that limits how fast that bullet can go. So even though, like on paper, you might think, oh, you know, this guy is going to be able to shoot that one better. No, it's not going to be magazine compliant, right? Because you can't load that bullet out long enough, you know? So that's where the Valkyrie kind of is a little bit neither fish nor fowl.
We'll be right back after the break.
Thinking of spring? Discover the beautiful white sand shorelines of Alabama's beaches and an abundance of outdoor recreation opportunities. Coast through miles of bike trails or tee off on world-class golf courses. Enjoy the thrill of a big catch when you cast into the Gulf of Mexico. Visit a state park or nature preserve for some hiking or bird watching. Most of all, just get out and have some fun. Make your vacation plans today at alabamabeaches.com.
I fully get it now with the arc, the 22 arc. But like, we've been talking for almost 20 minutes, and it kind of took about 20 minutes for you to explain to me just like why this matters. And like, I think the arc is a perfect example of sort of what we're going to get with these new cartridges, where it's like you really have to get into the details to understand their value. And I'm like, I just see so many, you know, readers, like Outdoor Life readers, forum commenters, you know, social media posters, pushing back and arguing about just this general idea that the industry is kind of forcing these new cartridges down our throats, like down consumers' throats, when really what people want is them to just make more 22-250, you know, just make more of the ammo for the guns, the rifles that we already have. What do you think about that as the shooting editor of Outdoor Life and having a little bit better of a view behind the curtain of what's going on in the industry?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, I am sympathetic to the general shooter out there who just wants to shoot their gun and not have to be bombarded with this and feel like they have to take a math class to understand the latest and greatest. It's like, this is supposed.
I mean, you did do a good job. You did a really nice job. I understand it, and I was not a good math student. You had some like superhero references and stuff in there, so that's cool. I think you made it accessible, but still, you know, it's a lot to take in.
It is. And, you know, on the one hand, I like it because it's a little bit of job security for me because, you know, the nerds at Hornaday put this out and they're just like, you're going to love it. And everybody's like, I don't know if I love it. Why do I love it?
Someone's got to explain why.
Yeah. Somebody's got to explain why. And this is the thing. I mean, particularly with this class of cartridge, you know, I think it's legit. I really, really do. You know, but I also don't see this thing like just taking off like hotcakes from the get-go. I think it's going to be, you know, I think the cartridge lifespan for this should be really good. I mean, Hornaday's done a really good job in the past with cartridge introductions, with supporting them with enough ammo in the pipeline to get things going and with lining up partners on the firearm side to chamber for it. And there is kind of a little bit of a gap here that that, you know, the Valkyrie, you know, because it was finicky and quirky and there was a lot of mixed experiences with it, a lot of people got turned off to that. The Nozzler itself is just so kind of proprietary, you know, that there's a fan base there for it. And I like the round, but, you know, it's not one that's going to be widely adopted in part. And of course, this goes to the naming convention. You know, it's nothing for us to see a 223 Remington round being loaded by a Federal or a Winchester or a Hornaday.
Right.
But with new cartridges, that's a little bit of a non-starter. Nobody wants to advertise their competition's name. And so when Nozzler named their Nozzler cartridges Nozzler, that is going to limit, just by default, the appeal for a competing ammo company to load it. Not that they never will, but it's a detriment. So that's why a Valkyrie is called a Valkyrie and not a 224 Federal. That's why an ARC is called an ARC and not a Hornaday, right? So that's also part of the naming convention. So again, that's a little inside baseball, and maybe that's obvious to people, but like that's where the ARC has now kind of carved out that niche, because the Nozzler isn't going to fill it, and it does something different anyway. Light bullets fast, and the ARC is bigger bullets, more efficient. And here's the other thing, is that these cartridges, like the 6-ARC, like they don't just like fall randomly out of the sky. You know, the 6-ARC, for example, was developed by a military request for the Navy. You know, they wanted, you know, and it's the same thing with like some of the use of the Blackout or the 300 PRC, you know, a lot like it can look like a lot of these cartridges are just a marketing team coming up with mumbo jumbo. But in fact, many of them are the result of specific needs, particularly in the military realm, for some type of performance. And
could you tell us more about the PRCs? Because I think those are the ones that are, like, within the last few years, those seem to be really making it with hunters. But I think there's still some kind of misunderstandings of and grumblings of like, well, why do I need a 7 PRC when I have a 7 REM mag? You know, which the 7 PRC, that's another cartridge that you've written about recently.
Yeah, no, it's a good question. So, you know, what we're seeing now in the last, let's call it 10 years, or even especially since 2007, let's go right to when the 6.5 Creedmoor was introduced, everybody's favorite cartridge to hate. You know, so since then, you know, we had a bunch of new cartridges, like the Winchester short mags, and you know, it's not like there was any lack of new cartridges prior to that. And, you know, I've written about this thing called modern cartridge design.
Right.
And that really informs kind of all of this. You know, in modern cartridge design, basically it's a set of guidelines that are being used by the designers of ammunition. You know, it's a series of best practices to make a better cartridge. And really what it is, it's the culmination of why cartridges made today are made much better than they were back in the 70s or 60s or whenever in the last century. So, you know, you look at the 7 REM mag, great cartridge, I love it. And you compare it to the 7 PRC, there's a lot of similarities in terms of, you know, just sort of basic, real basic headline performance. But the fact is that if the 7 REM mag didn't exist, and I've said this before, and we were designing a 7mm round from the ground up, we would not design the 7 REM mag. We would not design the 30-06. We would not design the 300 Win mag. As great as they are, that we know more about cartridge design now than we did back then. And also we have other things, better bullets, propellants, manufacturing tolerances, other things in our favor that allow us to do these cartridges better now as well. So, you know, and there's no reason not to shoot the old cartridges, but they aren't equivalent. They really aren't. You know, and for example, I'm shooting a 6.5-55 Swede now that I'm really enjoying messing around with, and like that's one of the classic things that people compare to the Creedmoor. Oh, it does, you know, it doesn't do anything my Swede doesn't do. Well, you know, and again, it's a bit of apples to apples. You know, I've got competition guns and sniper rifles in 6.5 Creed that are shockingly accurate, and this Swede is nice, but it's no Creed when it comes to precision, you know, and that's part of the challenge. I'm having fun hand loading for it and trying to make it, it's the best it can be. And for hunting at moderate distances, yeah, it doesn't make a difference. But if I'm in an NRL hunter match, I am instantly in last place with that Swede. Like, I am so far out of the running, it's not even funny. Whereas with a good 6.5 Creed, I might be vying for the podium. So that's the difference.
Yeah. And I think the reason why people get touchy about this is because they do have cartridges that they love. Like, you know, I look at the Winchester short mags, or what guys would say call WISMs, you know, like the, you know, 300 WISM, like the PRC cartridges. Are they going to replace the Winchester short mags just like in our hunting?
Yeah, they already have.
Yeah.
They already have. I mean, the Winchester short mags were great cartridges, but they didn't have these long, heavy for caliber bullets. Right. Yeah. And so they were like an evolutionary step. They were like the first fish that grew feet and started like waddling around on land. And you're like, oh, that's a cool trick, but you're still a fish. You got to get back in the water and breathe. Right. And that's kind of where the WISMs landed a little bit.
Yeah. Like a PRC is like a velociraptor or something.
Exactly. Oh, like the Hornady guys are going to love this, you know? yes. The PRCs are like a velociraptor. Exactly. So the PRCs are just the most kind of refined expression of modern cartridge design currently. And there are a lot of great rounds in there. Not everything is done by Hornady. You know, there are other nice rounds out there, you know, and a lot of niche applications of rounds. Like, I mean, a really nice one is the 6.547 Lapua, right? I mean, that actually predates the Creedmoor. But of course, you know, because Lapua didn't have the same, you know, kind of marketing muscle or the same goal to really push it out there as a general round, you know, it's kind of like the Nosler scenario where it remained very niche.
Yeah.
And then the Creedmoor came out, and those are two extremely similar rounds, and you know, and the Creedmoor just took the market, but the 6.547 Lapua is right there as well. Another great round.
Yeah. So like those, you know, like the short mags, the Winchester short mags, they lasted like 20 years, a little more than 20 years, right? They were introduced in the early 2000s.
Yep.
And do you remember, like, were they highly acclaimed? Did people like love them when they first came out?
You know, there was a lot of people jumped on the WISM bandwagon, and it was interesting, and it was highly acclaimed. Of course, me being me, I was a little skeptical because, you know, one of the problems, and I remember this where, and this was a problem that got the kinks worked out, but they often didn't feed very well because they've got those short, stubby bodies and the steep shoulders. And that was a situation where a lot of rifles, at least that I handled, just didn't feed them very smoothly.
Yeah.
And because they were short and fat, you could hold fewer of them in a traditional hunting rifle, right? Because they would take up that magazine capacity. And then there was also the matter of, you know, there was the touting of their accuracy benefits, that having to do with the short, efficient kind of stack of powder in there. And again, that is a principle of modern cartridge design, right? So they weren't wrong. However, the practical accuracy gains there with factory rifles and factory ammo versus traditional cartridges, there really wasn't any daylight between how those performed. Now, if you had a custom rifle and you were hand loading and that kind of stuff, sure, you know, that case design was a pretty good one. And you could get really exceptional accuracy, but for the average Joe, that performance benefit just really wasn't there. So I was skeptical of the short mags. And then there were the super short mags, which were just almost dead on arrival. I mean, such a flop. And probably really valuable collector's items, interestingly, you know, if you have some of that. But, you know, but again, I mean, it was the right idea. It was just kind of the wrong time.
Yeah.
And again, the 300 WSM, in fairness, is still chugging along. It's not like it's gone. And I don't think it's gonna like just die out, you know, but all the other ones basically you know, have gone by the wayside. So I mean, it's going to be very interesting to see. I mean, how long the PRCs and, you know, the Creed is with us. And I do have to say, though, that for all the hate, you know, I was just down at my local Murdoch's the other day. I was buying some components for the 6555 Swede to reload it. You know, I needed a shell holder that I couldn't find. So I went there and I was just looking at the array of ammo and the staggering number of 6.5 Creed loads. I mean, it just dominated the whole ammo section. So, I mean, that, you know, that tells the story. You know, retailers don't put that stuff out there if people aren't interested in it. And, you know, so it's that chicken and egg, you know, going back, like, I know you're a big fan of the 300 Savage, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, talk about your experiences with that lately.
Well, I just, you know, last fall, I wanted to hunt with my first deer rifle, which was a Savage 99 and 300 Savage. Just like for fun, just for kicks. I got a new LPVO scope and I wanted to put it on the rifle, just, you know, just kind of spruce it up and, you know, take the old rifle back to my family deer camp. And looking around for ammo just to see what was out there, I was very surprised to find that there was like no 300 Savage available. Luckily, I had some and I was able to still shoot the gun and hunt with it. But as a kid, like, you could walk into any like Fleet Farm or Walmart and just find a couple boxes of 300 Savage, like no problem anywhere. And I'm in like Minnesota, Wisconsin, like the beating heart of like upper Midwest 300 Savage like territory, right? So I waited till this spring when, you know, it wasn't going to be near hunting season and just, you know, look around for ammo this spring. And there were really only two options, and it was only online. Federal and Remington had it available. There was no other options for, you know, from Winchester or Hornady. I called around all of my local stores, you know, all my local sporting goods stores. Nobody had any ammo for it. It was just kind of a sign to me that the 300 Savage has been slowly being phased out, you know, since the 308 was introduced. But it was still a little sad, right? Like that cartridge is kind of fading away. But I think maybe the takeaway, or how it's relevant to this conversation, is because the Savage 99 and 300 Savage was so popular in the beginning, there are so many rifles out there, almost a million from what I could find, like reported on the internet. There's still a good amount of demand for the 300 Savage, even long after they stopped producing the Savage 99 and 300 Savage. So I think it's a little bit like, if there's enough kind of early interest and popularity and enough guns produced in that cartridge out of the gate and like enough kind of like loyal shooters for that cartridge, then I think it could survive. I think any cartridge could survive a long time as long as people keep buying the ammo for it. Is that like mesh with what you've seen?
Yeah. I mean, I'm over here crying in 35 Remington. So yes, I know how you feel. It does mesh, you know, and there are like, it's like echoes from beyond the grave, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And it's gone into the standard, from the standard cartridge offering to an obscure.
Yeah.
And eventually it'll be, it'll go the way of the 218 Watt Joy, you know, which was all the rage in the era of the flappers and the Roaring 20. Eventually it's gonna, you know, fade into obscurity. But yeah, to your point, you know, there's such a quantity of those rifles produced. And you know what's funny though, like talking about this, this is part of why I just love the 4570.
Did not see this going this way, but tell me more.
Well, it's the cartridge that just won't die. It's just too good. You know, I mean, the thing was obsolete in a sense in the late 1800s, right? it was our military round for a hot second.
Yeah.
And really was moribund and dead for a long time. But then in the, you know, I think it was the late 60s when Marlin came out with the 444, the 444 Marlin. all of a sudden people like the 4570 was like, hey, wait a minute, I can do that. You know, yeah. And so there was a little bit of a revival then. And then as guys started to trick out lever guns and things like, you know, backup guns for Alaska, like as that conversation, I think, took on more intensity and people were a little more deliberate about a defensive gun for certain situations, all of a sudden the 4570 kind of was reinvigorated, you know, particularly loaded at higher pressures than the original trapdoor specs, right? You know, in a modern action. And of course, some ammo makers took it too far. Like some of that hot 4570 ammo, you know, is as much a danger to what you're shooting at as to the guy pulling the trigger. But you know, that's
hey, something's gonna die.
Yeah, something's gonna die, or maybe a couple somethings. You know, and it just kind of keeps getting sort of more wind under its wings. And I love the cartridge for that. You know, because the guns are cool and the round itself is just cool, you know, these little cigar sized cartridges. And, you know, I mean, I took one, it's been a few years, but I took one on a whitetail hunt in Wyoming, which, you know, I mean, it's kind of, that is not levered. That's not 4570 terrain. Typically that's like long shots, the wind, the whole nine yards. Well, you know, I mean, the beauty of it is that it really forced me to hunt, you know, it's like a really excellent bow. Yeah. At that part, yeah, right. You know, and yeah. I ended up, you know, stalking up on a really nice buck, you know, at bow shot distance and just pole axed him because that round, you know, just leaves it all on the field.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just a great round. And it's kind of, it's just a reminder that, you know, there still are these classic old cartridges that are never going to die, even though, you know, over history, their interest in them has waxed and waned.
Yeah. Do you think that there's room for cartridges introduced now, or say within the last 15 years or so, to make that kind of run? Like, can the 6.5 Creedmoor last 100 years? Or is cartridge design and is the engineering just moving so fast now that all of this stuff in, say, 20 years is going to be, I don't want to say replaced, but not the standard anymore?
Yeah, I mean, that's a heck of a crystal ball question. I do think, interestingly, here's my take. I'll save my final answer here for a moment. But in terms of cartridge design and the efficiencies of the cartridges, I see us really only making incremental improvements kind of from here on out. With some things, there are a couple of exceptions, but you know, the brass we make is so good to such tight tolerances, the shape and the nature of like the chambers and the tight tolerances in them. And that goes back to the modern cartridge design. So good. You know, propellants are really good. I think they're going to keep improving propellants, but the propellants we have now, the best ones are so good. And the bullets are so good. You know, the one piece of the puzzle where I think there's still some performance gains, but it's going to be marginal, is in the primer technology. You know, so I do think we might see some custom primers coming out at some point that can help move the needle a little bit. So from that point of view, it's like, well, it's not really going to get that much better. It's going to kind of creep on. Maybe we're at peak cartridge, right?
Yeah.
But I think that's wrong.
Oh, no.
Yeah. What? Yep, I think that's wrong. I think that we are going to be facing some extremely disruptive technologies in the next few years that have to do with optics and electro-optics. You know, I think there's a good chance, I was talking to none other than our optics editor, Andrew McKean, about this. And, you know, he threw out the observations that he thinks in 10 years or so, he wouldn't be surprised if we no longer have like glass optics that we look through, that everything is going to be a projected image of something.
All digital optics.
All digital. And when you combine that with some of the stuff we're already seeing on the thermal night vision stuff. And again, remember, thermal is also not a night vision technology. It's 24/7.
Yeah.
So when you look at some of the electro optics and things like that, here's another way to put at it. You know, I do my precision rifle shooting. You know, I love it. You know, one of my favorite scopes is that Night Force ATAC-R 7-35, just beast of a scope. And there are a number of other good scopes and sort of in that class out there. You know, the way Sean Murphy put it to us, who used to work at Night Force, was like, that scope is like building the best black and white TV ever.
Mm.
And we're on the cusp of the age of the color television with this digital stuff. And so what that means in terms of sighting systems and ballistic solvers and solutions and stuff, I don't think we can predict what that's going to mean in terms of cartridge design.
Yeah.
And what survives and what doesn't down the road. You know, again, I don't see the 6.5 Creedmoor or any of these other modern cartridge design cartridges phased out anytime soon. I think they're going to have a very long run, a bunch of them. But some of them are. Like, look, the 6 Creed, you know, my little darling project I did with Hornady back in the day. I mean, it's still hanging in there, but it didn't kick the 243 off the podium.
Right.
Right. You know, it and I don't think the 6 Creed's done, you know, but I do think it sort of settled into its level, which is, you know, decent, but not setting the world on fire, even though it is objectively, it's a much better round than the 243, but the 243 just has such a head start and a legacy, and it does what it needs to do that, you know, the quote unquote advantages of the 6 Creed aren't enough to dislodge it, you know? And I think that same stickiness is going to apply to something like the 6.5 Creedmoor. It's just too damn good, despite what the haters say. It's just a great round. And so I think that stickiness, no matter what happens with these disruptive technologies, is going to ensure that it has a long, long run. But I'm not as confident anymore that my notion of just these little incremental gains is going to hold true. It wouldn't surprise me if in the next 10, 15, 20 years that things look very, very different from a shooting and hunting perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. My mind is spinning a little bit right now because, I mean, in some ways the ARC is sort of a representation of this, right? Like they saw the value in it to fit this world of thermal scopes in nighttime coyote hunting, right? So like we are seeing cartridge design accommodate these different sighting systems and advancements already.
Yeah, absolutely. And to even go back, you know, I mean, eventually the Velociraptor was replaced by, you know, influencers. So, you know, the evolution continues.
right. You know, I was gonna say a turkey. Maybe the future won't be better, but it will be different. I don't know.
Yeah.
All I know is that if Hornady does come out with the 22 Velociraptor, like, they better call us first, because I think we're onto something here.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know what? They don't think much of our clever naming conventions. You know, I really wanted the 6 Creed to originally be called the 6mm Hole, HOLE, for Hornaday Outdoor Life Express, but they just rightly just, you know, patted me on the back, thanked me for helping out, and did what they wanted to do.
Well, John, I have more to think about now, in this future of thermals and cartridges and cartridge design. So thank you.
Yeah. Anytime, my friend.
The Outdoor Life podcast is edited by Mike Peterson. It's hosted by our editor in chief, Alex Robinson. It's produced by me, executive editor Natalie Krebs. Music in this episode was composed and performed by Pierre Locatelli via APM Music. You can read OL Shooting editor John B. Snow's full review of the 22 ARC at outdoorlife.com/ARC. That's outdoorlife.com/ARC.